Drive Time on 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.
Voice of the Cape, Drive Time it is. I'm Shafiq Morton. Assalamu alaikum. Coming up in today's show, George Bezos, no introduction, passes on. A tree falls in the forest. Government outlines a new governance model for South Africa, particularly local governance. Techpreneurs, the face of the future. Weekly Middle East report in which it has been suggested that Trump might get the Nobel Peace Prize. Trump? Nobel Peace Prize? I checked my watch. It's not April. Sports Wrap, what's trending? Stay tuned.
Drive Time on 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.
Voice of the Cape, Drive Time, welcome back. 072-238-0712 is the WhatsApp line. There you can communicate with us right inside studio. George Bezos, the anti-apartheid campaigner and human rights lawyer who defended Nelson Mandela and others during the decades-long struggle for South Africa's democracy, has died. He was 92 years of age. Bezos, who was born in 1927 in Greece, arrived in South Africa in 1941 after he and his father fled the Nazi occupation of Greece. He later studied law and represented the Rivonia Trialists. Online for comment is veteran ANC member and former minister Barbara Hogan. Ms. Hogan, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It is a sad day, isn't it? And unfortunately, we have to bring out the cliches. I think a huge tree has fallen in the forest.
Yes, we all are lost for words because you can only talk in cliches, and those cliches don't even begin to describe the person he was and the legacy that he's left us. And so, yes, we do use them, and thank goodness we do have them, a colossus of a person, and a person who held us through the struggle years in so many ways.
No, absolutely. A very unique personality in the sense that he wasn't the political activist, more in the sense that he was a legal activist. That's how I'm trying to get my head around it. I mean, he was the guy who stood up in court fighting for the lives, actually, of the Rivonia Trialists.
Yes. And the interesting thing about him is that he wasn't affiliated to the National Liberation Movement, even though the security police were obsessed with the fact that they thought that he was head of the Communist Party underground. He wasn't. And what distinguished George is that he was fully identified with the struggle against apartheid in his individual capacity, but also in a capacity where he was defending so many people who were fighting for liberation. And that was his distinctive mark. He was there every time he was needed. He was there at the barricades to assist us in the courts.
It really is an amazing legacy, because often when people pass on, they are measured by their legacy. And undeniably, George Bezos has a massive legacy, doesn't he? I mean, he's going to be remembered for decades to come.
You know, he was probably at most of many of the most significant political trials that took place during the hard days of apartheid, 60s, 70s, 80s, and even into the 90s. And, you know, today he was in the 20s, he was still fighting for democracy. And that is one of the incredible characteristics of him that we will remember, is that he was always there through every phase of the struggle. But more than that is that he took it upon himself to sustain those that he was defending and trying to protect. You always had the sense with George that this wasn't just a political mission. He wasn't a political lawyer in that sense. He was a lawyer with a set of human values that accompanied everything that he did. What he did was because he believed in humanity. He believed in you as a person, and he believed in the fight against evil for a morality that was greater than the immorality of apartheid and the immorality of corruption as we see it now.
It's interesting stuff you're talking about. Look, I'm certainly no expert on this, but I've always seen George Bezos as a humanitarian first. Yes. And a lawyer second, and that to me, again, I'm no expert, seems to me to have been his compass more than anything else.
You put it so beautifully. That was his compass as a humanitarian. He was a lion of a humanitarian. And it wasn't because he was eloquent, and he certainly was. It wasn't because of his courtroom speeches and presentations and his very withering cross-examination. It was because of the charm and the warmth and the humility and the greatness of his being. You know, he was a person who loved vegetable gardening.
Mm-hmm.
He's always known by many of my fellow activists as he would buy spits, lamb spits, at his home, and many people would congregate there. He was that humanity, that great sense of being a human being and recognizing in another that you were a friend, that you were a fellow traveler, that you had your weaknesses, your strengths. He was just utterly charming as a human being.
No, I mean, you, as I say, you're certainly not the first person to be describing him in this particular fashion. But also what is coming through quite strongly is that he was very keen on education, in the sense of mentoring people in the legal profession and trying to mentor them in his way of doing things.
Certainly, and I think the Legal Resources Center was one of the organizations that served him so well, and he served them so well. I think he and a number of those really high-quality lawyers, like Justice Muhammad, like Arthur Shaskelson, like many of those lawyers, led the way for this new generation of human rights lawyers these days that I'm so in admiration of. And I think if it hadn't been for that previous generation that taught us that you could fight legally as well, it just didn't have to be at the barricades, we would be very bereft of society. And I think you're absolutely right. You set that example.
In another sense, what strikes me about people such as George Bezos, Arthur Chaskelson, even Dalla Omar, who is very active down here in the Western Cape, is that these people, as lawyers, I think they taught people in the struggle that your struggle also had to have logic to it. And the law taught this logic in terms of approaching and dealing with issues.
Yes. And, you know, that it was funny. I was thinking today about the ANC, for which I went to prison for, and, you know, for which many of people have been affiliated to, and the difficulties and the sorry state that it often finds itself in now. And I was thinking, what was it about, you know, this generation of people that was so incredible? And it was also, you know, the leaders of the UDF, many of the leadership that came to the fore in the struggle years. And for me, one of the things that attracted me as a young white girl who was trying to find my way was just how eminently rational and sensible that leadership was. You know, things would veer to this side and to that side, and somehow you always knew at a certain moment the leadership would pull things right and pull it together. And it was those kind of people with that incredible sense of logic but that always that readiness to grasp the moment, its nuances, and to understand the sensible way to go forward and to take people with you.
So true, because going back, I can remember when Govan Mbeki was released, and he was one of the first big releases, and when he was finally allowed to address the media, it was music to people's ears, because he was the personification of what you've just described. And then one began to realize this is why the apartheid authorities feared these men so much. They had such great mental capacities to understand the situation, to analyze it and to act on it, that the intellect became more of a threat than anything else.
Yes, that intellect, that strategic knowledge, you know, that incredible ability to take the long view into term and to have a strategic objective and to work systematically to it and to understand what was a necessary compromise and what was a not necessary compromise. You know, I'm not glorifying, but I do say this was a unique generation who had the courage to lead in very difficult times and often to lead in contested spaces.
No, absolutely. And I think to get back to George Bezos, I think he realized that better than most. And I think he also perhaps realized that the role that he had to play was exactly the role that he played.
Yes. And, you know, I think many of us can talk about George as you know, his impact as a lawyer, as a human being, as being so always there in the struggle for all of us who were going through hardships, prison and detention and whatever. But what we don't think about often is the load that they bore. All of these struggle lawyers, you know. Judge Satchel was my lawyer. If it hadn't been for her, I would not have survived for many times, because they carried all your helplessness, all the distress, you know, the people that were tortured, all the harms, all the injuries. They were there to soothe and to help you through it. And that trauma, can you imagine being the lawyers at Rivonia when you realized that these people could be sentenced to death? Can you imagine that they got life sentence? Yes, that was a relief. But you were close to them. You understood the intellect and the power of these people. And you knew that they wouldn't come out of jail during apartheid, and maybe never. Just that trial alone, can you imagine going home after sentence was passed and having to live a normal day thereafter? And George was there at it time and time again. I remember when he was giving evidence about a Lieutenant Struwwelpeter who tortured young detainees who sat on their chests and pulled their teeth out. And George breaking down in tears when he was doing that cross-examination. Can you imagine being exposed to that brutality and having to help people through that trauma week after week after week of your life?
No, absolutely. I mean, sometimes I think there must have been psychologists. I can remember in the 80s the pressure, and I can only refer to the Cape situation because I was in Cape Town, that people like Essa Mosa and Dalla Omar were under. I even to this day, I sit back and I wonder how, like you're saying, did they actually get through all of this? How did they manage to stay sane? Because I'm sure you'll agree, in those days, it wasn't just 9 to 5. It was 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year.
Crisis after crisis. Crisis after a state of emergency. These people are being tortured. These people are being hunted down. These people have been shot. And always it was to the lawyers. Those were one of the groups we turned to. And they had this deft way of just holding it together and seeing us through and using the chinks in the armor to win some rights and some pathways for us. You know, and I think of someone like Dalla Omar, who wasn't ANC aligned most of his political life. He had very different views, not very different views. I mean, he was in the anti-apartheid struggle. But even so, even coming from a different political tradition, he was able to throw himself full force into the struggle and represent people of all ideological persuasions without prejudice and move politically and move people into positions that was good for the future. I mean, extraordinary human beings.
No, absolutely. And I think, Ms. Hogan, it's important that we don't forget them, because I'm sure you'll agree with me, the struggle was a complex being, and there were many people who contributed to it in many different ways.
Certainly. And the most important thing we need to remember and carry with us, I think, during this time is courage of convictions and courage to lead. And to always, always retain your humanity, your humility.
Ms. Barbara Hogan, a veteran ANC member and also former minister in government, thanks for chatting to us about the legacy of George Bezos. It's been a pleasure. Stay safe.
Thank you very much, and thanks for inviting me.
Drive Time 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.